This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray.
Hi, shooters. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 2 of your middle of the week MSP podcast here on the Handgun World Podcast. MSP stands for Modern Self-Protection. That's because your main host for the MSP Midweek Podcasts is none other than my co-host Ben Branham. He's coming up a little bit later in this episode. I tell you what I'd like to do, though. There are a couple of voicemails that have come to me, and I want to address them. If you'd like to send me a voicemail message, 210-646-1727 is my telephone number. Leave me a recorded voicemail of 3 minutes or less, and I'll put you on the Handgun World Podcast. 210-646-1727. So let me knock out these voicemails real quick, and then we'll put Ben Branham on for this week's second episode of the MSP, Modern Self-Protection, Middle of the Week podcast. All right, here's the first voicemail that comes from Dave in Utah.
Hi, Bob. This is Dave from Utah. I just had a comment about the Aurora, Colorado shooting and the comment about a body armor that we hear. So with this, we've heard that he was wearing body armor and that therefore, you know, nobody would have been able to do anything. Let's just think about this. If you go to Discovery Channel or History Channel and watch any of their documentaries that they do about armor, they talk about one of the disadvantages of Kevlar is that, yes, it will stop the bullet from going through you, but you still, I think they said that, you know, getting hit in a Kevlar vest from a .357 Magnum bullet is like getting hit with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball from a major league pitcher. So if you want to see what it would be like to get shot, you know, wearing a Kevlar vest, go to the batting cages and maybe pick one that's like, you know, pick one of the pitching machines that's shooting, you know, throwing them out there at 75 miles an hour and, you know, let that hit you in the chest a few times. And of course, don't actually do this because you could actually really get hurt and maybe even die from it. So my point is that the people who want to discourage people from carrying guns will say things like that because they just want to discourage you in general. Oh, you know, you shouldn't try because you won't succeed. But in any case, I mean, shooting somebody several times, 5, 6, 7 shots in a row, even if they are wearing body armor, it's going to disrupt them. They will not be able to, you know, think through that. They'll stop shooting people. You'll slow down their rate of fire. Maybe buy yourself some time for another tactic. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And also, I had read an article in the San Francisco Chronicle that says that maybe he wasn't wearing body armor. It was just a vest with pockets. So if I can find that link, I'll send it over to your Facebook page, Bob. But, just food for thought. You know, don't be afraid to fight and don't let people discourage you from defending yourself. All right. Have a good day and keep up the good work. Bye.
Thank you, Dave. You know, you've kind of echoed what I've said on this show quite a bit. What really matters most is getting hits. Now, we all want to be as accurate as we can. In fact, I was real frustrated in the last IDPA match. It was a carbine match, actually. I was very frustrated with myself because I was not accurate. Any of you listening ever been in that situation? You know you can do better, but you just messed up. That was me. So, yes, we all want to be accurate. I'm not saying that accurate shooting is not important, but Dave brings up a good point here. If there would have been someone in that theater, now think about this, folks. If there would have been someone in that theater that could have returned fire and placed several rounds on his chest or center of mass or somewhere, even if he was wearing armor, yes, it probably would have slowed him down. Okay? It most likely would have slowed him down. And now, you know, I know we all know that all handguns suck when it comes to stopping power. We know that. All right? That's a given. I don't think I need to repeat that. I'd be beating a dead horse, wouldn't I? But really, how many of you listen to this? How many of you really want to get hit by a handgun round? You know, nobody does. It would hurt, man. I mean, come on. If you survive it, that can't be pleasant. I've never been hit with a handgun round. Thank God. I hope I don't. Like I always say, I hope I go the rest of my life and I never get shot or never have to shoot anybody. But when I see what the rounds that come out of my gun can do, some of the things that I've shot with them, when I see the destruction that it can cause, I say to myself, I don't want to get hit by something like this. And I don't think that that guy in that theater would have wanted to get hit either. I don't think Mr. Holmes would have wanted to get hit. He's a coward, folks. I can't use the word was because he's still living. But he's a coward. He's a coward. Most likely, I think there's a very, very good chance if there could have been one, maybe two, maybe even more than two people returning fire, placing shots, minute of man shots, okay? That's pretty much, instead of MOA, we're talking just minute of man. Just get rounds on him. You know, Ben Branham was talking about that a few weeks ago. And also, he talks a lot about defending yourself in his latest podcast. So, Dave, I'm glad you brought that up as well. You know, fight, folks. Sometimes you just have to fight. Sometimes a bad guy resists simply because you're fighting back. Because they didn't expect you to. Right? I mean, they didn't expect you to have a gun. They certainly didn't expect you to use that gun. And they probably didn't expect you to know how to use that gun. And a lot of times, that's all it takes to be able to stop a bad guy from continuing his dirty deeds. So yeah, Dave, thanks very much. I appreciate you giving me that email. It's you know, that you brought up a very, very good point. And by the way, listen to Ben Branham's podcast. He's now doing his own podcast. He has a blog called Modern Self-Protection, and that's at modernselfprotection.com, and he's got his first episode up on mindset. You should listen to that. He's got some good information, and of course, as you know, he's been contributing to the Middle of the Week podcast. Just about every time it's going to be Ben Branham contributing to my MSP Midweek podcast. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that. Very good, and thanks for the voicemail. All right, let's take the next one.
Hey, Bob, just started listening to your podcast. I've gone through about 5, 6 of them, and we'll be listening to more. Hey, got a comment. I've noticed that Mayor Bloomberg has not come out with any other messages other than the shooting in New York. I wonder if it's because his officers were the ones that did all the actual wounding of the bystander. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you very much for calling that in, sir. I think he's from Kansas. He didn't identify himself, but that's okay. You don't have to identify yourself when you call into my voicemail. Hey, very good point, sir. Isn't it amazing? Anti-gunners like Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and you know, this seems to be the situation with most anti-gun people. Whenever an incident happens that doesn't fit their agenda, they just kind of sweep it under the rug, don't they? Right? I mean, think about it. Whenever it's a concealed carrier that does something wrong, oh my God, man, I tell you what, it's national news. It's the biggest tragedy that ever happened. You know? I just threw my hands up here while I was driving. Hey, I'm doing this as usual while I'm on the road, and I just passed another car. I kind of threw my hands up a little bit, slightly over the steering wheel, and the lady kind of shot me a look like, what is wrong with this guy? He's wearing a headset, he's talking, and he's throwing his hands up over the windshield, or over the steering wheel. She's probably thinking, sure, sir, shut up and drive, right? You're unsafe. Don't worry, folks, I'm not unsafe. I'm being very safe here. I mean, I just let go of the wheel for, you know, just half a second, just as long as it takes me to throw my hands up. All right, back on track. The anti-gunners you know, if it's something that we concealed carriers do, oh my God, it's just a terrible tragedy, isn't it? And this is why people shouldn't have guns, blah, 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 blah. But people like Bloomberg, when it's the New York City cops that kind of screw up, oh man, let's just kind of sweep that under the rug because it doesn't fit his anti-gun agenda. Just think about it. You know, thank you for calling in, sir. I think that, you know, thank you for bringing this up because I would have forgot to talk about this. And by the way, speaking of anti-gunners, I'm waiting for the day that I get a call from someone who's anti-gun. Now, I know they probably don't listen to this show, but look, if you know somebody who's anti-gun and they want to state their case, I have an open podcast here. I have an open avenue here, or whatever you want to call it. I have an open door. Anybody that wants to come on the show and state their case, they can leave me a voicemail. If they want to leave me two or three different short voicemails, I'll piece them all together. That's fine. Give them my voicemail phone number of 210-646-1727. Better yet, I would love to get on Skype and interview someone who's anti-gun. And I'd like to bring them on the show and let them state their case. I have a new way of recording Skype calls. You know, as you just recently heard, I had Jack Rumbaugh talking about rifles and red dotted pistols, and the sound quality was better. I got John Hadaway coming up next week. And, hey, by the way, when John comes up next week, we're not going to talk about training in 1911s. We got some survival and preparedness information to talk to you about. And that's a good quality Skype recording. So anyway, I'd love to have an anti-gunner interview with me. All right, well, that does it for the voicemails. That's it. So let's just do a quick pause here with a quick announcement of some kind. And then Ben Branham will be right with you. Don't go away.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
Hello and welcome to another midweek episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Ben Branham, and I think we're going to make this a normal weekly show. Bob asked me to get on here and talk to you guys again. He gave me a cool suggestion about talking about the guns that I own, why I own them, and what I use them for. So I thought I'd start out with one of my oldest carry guns, and it's a Caltech P32 Auto. I know most people think the 32 is underrated, and there's about a million reasons why nobody likes a Caltech, but I bought this one years ago, and I absolutely love it. I bought it back in California when I lived there, and I bought it in 2003, and that was right after new regulations in California had gone through that you could only buy pistols that were on their approved list. Isn't that beautiful? Anyways, the Caltech was not on their approved list, so I ended up buying a used one for almost $500. Now they go for $300 and change. Their website, I think, lists them at... Oh, I thought I wrote it down, but apparently I did not. I think they're going for about $300. You can find them out in the real world at like $250, sometimes a little bit less. Oh, there's the price. The cheapest one, no frills and everything, they're listing at $318 right now. But I helped my dad buy one a couple years ago for like $250. You can get them pretty cheap, which is really a cool thing. But I paid a fortune for it because I really wanted a small little pocket gun to keep as a backup gun when I was working for an armored car company out there. It worked great. At first, you can buy a little pocket clip with it, and I bought that, and I kept it clipped to my back pocket. No holster, no nothing, just the clip. It worked great. I really didn't have any problems with it. You know, looking back, I probably should have had something more covering the trigger guard than just my pants, but it worked out really well for me. After getting rid of the clip, and the clip... Part of the problem with the clip, and I have the gun in my hand right now, is that the clip actually rusts pretty well. It's I'm not sure if they didn't use a good piece of steel or if it wasn't well finished or what, but I've had a couple of them and they've rusted on me. And, you know, rust kind of spreads, so I would clean that off, or I bought a couple of them. I had a left and a right-handed one for a while. I would carry it in my left back pocket. So if my primary weapon got down or something happened, I can pull it out of my left pocket. But after the clip, and I started to break clips too, to be honest with you. I'd catch it on things when I was sitting and getting up and down. So I went to a pocket carry, and I bought a DeSantis Nemesis holster, which they make great little pocket holsters. Really enjoyed carrying it like that. Carried it for a long time. And to tell you the truth, I still use it as a pocket gun in my left back pocket if I'm carrying an extra weapon. Or I will carry this as my primary weapon right now, just if I go to the store or if I need something that can't be made in. And right now, I got on my desk, it's a Raven Concealment Carry Solutions holster, I forget. Raven Concealed Carry, I think is the name of it. They're really hard to get. I got lucky and they had one in stock. And I use it with their inside the waistband clips. And I can do it in a pair of cargo shorts or if I'm just going to the store for the Stop and Rob or something. My wife likes ice cream late at night. And, you know, who gets to make that run all the time? But it's fun. Well, I'll just grab this, and no matter what I'm sitting, no matter what I'm doing, I can just shove it inside my shorts, and it's light enough to carry that way. So I bought this in 2003. I've abused the crap out of it. And what I've done since then is I've bought a 10-round magazine and that pocket clip. That's about all. To be honest with you, I don't know where the original... Well, no, one of the original magazines, I know where it is. The other one, I do not. I tossed it because of the problem I had with this little gun. The only problem with little guns for me is they're too little. This one, with the flush-fitting magazine, which is 7 rounds, so you get 7 plus 1 in the magazine, I can't get 2-finger grip on it. You know, a little gun, normally your pinky hangs off. Well, my fat fingers... My problem is not only my pinky hangs off, but my other finger hangs off too. So I'd only get 1 finger out on the gun. And you think that might be weird or whatever, but to be honest with you, a Glock 30, the 45 caliber, same thing happens to me. I cannot shoot that without a magazine extension because I can only get 1 finger in there to hold onto the gun. And really with 1 finger, I can't hold on to anything. Even the 32 jumps too much for me to hold on to. So I actually went to, they made an extended magazine base, which was really cool. Gave you 1 more round in the magazine, gave you something to hang on to. Thought it was the coolest thing for a while until I started having problems with it. So I tossed it, bought this 10-round magazine. With the 10-round magazine in there, still fits in my pocket, still hides underneath everything. The only thing I can't do now, because actually I get a full grip on this 10-round magazine, I can even get my pinky to grip on the gun. Which, you know, a little pocket gun and my pinky goes around it. Find me another gun that does that. But my only problem is that I can't palm the gun anymore. Literally, these things are so small. When I had the flush fit magazine on there, I could palm the gun and almost totally conceal it in just the palm of my hand. Kind of like one of those little Derringers or something. So it's really a small gun. I really like it. There's really no sights to the gun. I have the original first generation, which I actually like better than the newer ones, and it has no sights at all. When I say no sights, there is a little notch on the front of the front part of the slide that sticks up, and really it's just a part of the top of the slide that hasn't been flattened. It's still curved. There's a little white dot in there and a cutout for it. And in the back, there's a U-notch, but the U-notch doesn't go... It's not a hole. It's a U down in the back of the slide, and it really is just a hole in the slide. There's no like wings that would hang off like a Smith & Wesson J-frame. And the way you use them is you just dot the I. So you can see a white line from that U-notch in the back and the white dot in the front. When I bought it, I thought, well, I'll never be able to use that for anything. It's kind of dumb. But I bought it for really a belly gun, something I can push against somebody and pull the trigger, something that I'm going to do arm's length, nothing more. Well, when I started shooting it, I was pleasantly surprised to see that this little gun with the crappy little sights that it has on it, I could actually make hits out to 25 yards on a body target, which is pretty incredible for a pocket gun this size, and for a gun with really no sights on it. So I'm holding it right now, and I thought I'd just give it a look. The trigger's kind of, it's a double action long hard trigger pull. Caltech says it's 5 pounds. I think they're lying. It actually has a hammer that's unexposed. It's inside the frame and the slide, so you can put your thumb on the back of it and still pull the trigger. It is a preset trigger, I think they'd call it, kind of like a Glock, where they call it a double action trigger, but you can't do double strike capabilities. So it has to cycle for you to be able to pull the trigger again. And you can hear me in the background kind of playing with it. It's a true double action trigger, so there's no reset. You have to let the trigger go all the way out into the travel and then come back at it, which is all right. There's no safety. There's not even a magazine, or there's a magazine release in the traditional spot behind the trigger guard, but there's not even a slide stop. There is an internal slide stop, and if you have an empty magazine in there and you pull it back, so it locks up open on the last round, the only way to let that thing back into battery is to pull it back and let go and slingshot it. It's kind of a weird little gun and a weird little design in that aspect, but it never bothered me, and I kind of liked it because it's so flat, there's just nothing to it. And you hear me playing with it, locking back the slide and everything. Don't worry, I'm safe. The ammo is in the other room, and I'm sitting here with just the gun to ensure that there's no oops, and I have quadruple, triple-checked this thing to make sure. All right, over the years, this thing has started to show wear on me. Actually, a lot of wear, if you want to be the truth. It's sat in my pocket forever. I still got a pocket clip on there. There's rust on the pocket clip right now that I really need to clean off or get rid of. And actually, to tell you the truth, the screw on the back that holds the pocket clip on is loose, too. So good thing I'm doing an inspection. Next week, I was going to clean the thing anyways. The bluing is starting to wear off on the side of the slide. I forget what Caltech calls their bluing, but to me, it looks like a bluing, almost a traditional bluing, where it's very, very black, very smooth, too, not rough. But I can tell where that's all wearing off from holster wear and body wear. So my nice black slide is turning a silver color in a lot of spots. The barrel shroud has since discolored with wear forever. The barrel itself is no longer, it's kind of a satin finish, but it used to be a really pretty finish. It's no longer a really pretty finish. It's just years and years of abuse rubbing in pockets on everything. But this thing still runs, and it runs fine. Wow, I don't know what I could say, but besides, it's been running great forever. I did pull up some stats for you guys to look at it, and this thing is so small. To give you an idea, I pulled up stats against a Bodyguard Smith & Wesson and a Ruger LCP. Weight of this little thing with a full capacity is lighter than the Bodyguard is empty, or the LCP. So this thing weighs 6.6 ounces, the Bodyguard is 11 ounces, and the Ruger is 9.4 ounces. Length, it's a good tenth of an inch shorter than everything else. Height, it's a good tenth of an inch shorter than everything else. Obviously, that doesn't count when I put that extra magazine in there, so that doesn't bother me at all. It still fits in my pocket, by the way, with that extra magazine, the 10-round magazine that sticks out the bottom. The width is what really gets you. It's almost a tenth of an inch skinnier than everything else. The P32 that I'm holding is width, max width is 0.75 inches. The Bodyguard is 0.842 and the Ruger LCP is 0.82. So you really get that skinnier grip and it's super light. The prices, P32 is retails, it says $318. Smith & Wesson's site says the Bodyguard goes for $379, and Ruger's site says that their LCP goes for $419. The 32 ammo, I looked it up on Lucky Gunner, who I have an affiliate program with, so if you want to throw me a buck so I can buy a better recording equipment, I'm looking at a microphone right now so I can do a little better audio quality for everybody. But if you go through my affiliate link on my website at modernselfprotection.com, they give me, I think, 1% or something like that. It's, you know, it's almost nothing. But anyways, Lucky Gunner's been kind to me. They sent me ammo in the past to test, and I still have a test and review for them to do. So anyways, I thought I'd give them a shout-out just for that. They're selling Federal, American Eagle, the Red Box stuff. The 32 auto is $21.50 for 50 rounds, and the 380 is $17.25. The Winchester ammo at my local Academy store is the same price for the 32 and the 380. So price-wise, the little Caltech is better priced. I mean, ammo is a little bit more expensive for the 32, But I don't know. I've carried this gun as almost daily for going on 10 years now. Never had a problem with it. It hasn't broken yet, which is pretty incredible, because if you guys know me, I've actually broken my Glock and had to put some more trigger parts in there to repair it. The Glock never failed on me. It kept firing, but the trigger was horrible because there was a notch grooved in it, and so I had to replace a couple safety pieces and the trigger bar itself so that my Glock would run smooth again. All right, I put a list together of things that I really like about this gun. Its size, we already talked about how small it is. Shootability, I talked a little bit about how it shoots so well. You can make hits out to 25 yards. It's a long double-action trigger pull, kind of like a revolver, but it's a little bit dirty. Caltech's not known for their great triggers, but it just keeps working. It points real natural for me, and I can get my big paws around it. It really fits well with that 10-round magazine. Even with the 10-round magazine in, I weighed it. It weighs less than the Bodyguard or the Ruger LCP. I can make those great hits, and it's got a cheaper price. The things I don't like about this thing is that 7-round magazine was flush fit, and it makes it smaller to palm. I can't hold on to it to shoot it. That's not saying much, because I can't hold on to a lot of small guns. I can't hold on to M&P's new Shield, their Wonder 9mm that everybody seems to love and says the best pistol ever. My hands are too big. I cannot make that gun work. I might be able to do it to save my life, but that's about it. I will pick just about anything else. With a 7-round magazine, you can buy that 1-round extension, and you run into problems. And I have heard other people run into problems with that 1-round extension. And Caltech has finally acknowledged that you could have a problem with that 1-round extension, and it's actually selling a part to put into your magazine called a rim lock spacer. I have no idea what it looks like. Never used it. Never wanted to use it. My 10-round magazine runs like a dream. Would never touch it. But this kind of happens with all semi-auto pistols that come over from a lot of revolvers. 32 ACP is a semi-rimmed cartridge. It was designed to be able to kind of sit in your revolver. And when it does, it needs that rim, like your 38 special round, so it doesn't fall in there. Well, the problem with that rim is it's bigger than the rest of the cartridge and it sticks out. If you think about your 9mm, 40, 45, they're all that rim in the back, there's a divot, and then the shell casing is exactly the same size. Well, with the 32, that rim in the back is actually a little bit fatter than the rest of the shell. So with spring tension and everything, I don't know how I did it with my hand, but it used to happen with that 1-round extension, that the bottom round would jump in front of the other one, and then you'd have rim lock where the magazine spring is pushing that bottom round up, and that top round is actually behind it, and that rim is hanging over the bottom round, so the gun won't chamber around. It's a pain in the butt for you to get out by hand. You almost need a tool like a knife or something really skinny to stick in there to get it out, but you can do it. So the first time I found that out, you know, I quit carrying one of those extra mags, and then I found these 10-round magazines, and they just run great. Haven't had a problem with it. I know for years Caltech just said, well, we don't know what you're talking about, and I know lots of people and lots of different reviews that have found that problem. So now they have a spacer rim, and they call it a rim lock spacer that you can buy to drop in your magazines, so that supposedly doesn't happen. But like I said, it doesn't matter to me because, hey, I don't use it. Sorry, I had to take a quick pause there. It didn't look like my recording equipment was really recording. I'm still kind of learning this podcast thing, so I got to watch the little lines go up and down and make sure everything's recorded. So the other problems I found with this gun and the things that I don't like is it actually rusts, and the wear it's showing is pretty bad. And I've knocked the rust off of it a bunch, and to its credit, I carry it against my skin all the time. I carry it in my back pocket. I'm out in the summer heat with it. When I can't carry a full-size gun, I carry this one, which means shorts and a t-shirt, which means the whole gun is really... I mean, the Raven Concealment holster I use has a sweat guard, they call it, so the holster goes up to cover the whole back of the gun. But really, when you sweat, it drips right down that sweat guard and into the gun. So I'm not sure if I had another gun like and I wore it like that, that it would wear too. And after 10 years, I'm not sure of the amount that I actually dry fire in practice. If other guns wouldn't show this much wear, it really looks, it looks used and abused right now. See if I can post some pictures for you guys. This thing, I mean, I probably should just start replacing parts on it. Like I said, it's been 10 years and almost an everyday carry. 32 ammo, I haven't counted, but I mean, I used to do a couple hundred rounds through it at least a year when I was working for the armored car company. I'd probably do 250, 300 rounds a year in this thing. So if you figure that 200-300 rounds a year times 10 years, you know, I'm looking at 2,000 or 3,000 rounds through this little gun. Most people don't shoot that in a lifetime in one of these little things. They don't like to, but that should give you a testament of how much this little thing actually recoils like none, which is the great thing about the 32 over the 380. The 380 Bodyguard and the 380 Ruger, I've shot both of them. The LCP kicks pretty hard. I mean, it's a little barker to me. It barks real loud and it bites a little bit on me. The Bodyguard, it was a little bit less. I really like that Colt Mustang. If I was going to buy a 380, I'd go a little bit bigger and go for the Colt Mustang because it controls around better. And it was really loud and it barked, but I didn't have a lot of the recoil bite that the other ones did. I told you before the trigger's kind of messed up. I mean, training, you can get over a bad trigger. It just kind of sucks that you have to train to get over a bad trigger. It would have been nice if they put a good trigger in here. And after, you know, Bob says do a 1,000-round trigger job on it, I got to say, after the couple thousand rounds I got through this thing and the amount that I dry fire, you can hear me clicking away with both hands right now, that it actually does pretty good. The other thing I don't like about the trigger is the true double action, because it doesn't work exactly like my Glock does. I'm shooting a Glock right now. The Glock, you can fire off that reset. It's real close, real fast, real crisp. I know Glock advertises it like it's the best thing out there. I got news for you that your 1911 has a shorter reset than just about anything you ever find. In fact, I haven't found a gun that resets less than that. The Glock does not reset even close to the same speed as the 1911. Sorry, Glock guys. But so this thing, you have to, if you hear it, there's your click. Now I'm gonna let the trigger out. Oh, I'm sorry. Rack the slide. I'm gonna let the trigger out. You hear both clicks. You actually have to have that thing click twice or the trigger won't reset and you'll have the dead trigger and you can't fire another round. We talked about the sights. The sights are almost non-existent. I actually prefer the sights on the older model than the newer model. The newer model has a post and notch sight that's actually drilled in. Hold on a second, everybody. Sorry, I had to hold off one more second. My three-year-old burst into the room wanting to play. I office out of my bedroom with a camouflage sheet up on the wall to try to keep the reverb and the echo down. But so he burst in looking to play, so I sent him to his mother. Anyways, on this little 32, those sights, the newer sights, I like even less. They're a little post and notch, and when I say little, I mean little. If you look at the pictures of them, you can barely even see that there's a sight in there. The other thing that Caltech said they improved was the extractor and the ejector. You can tell it's totally redesigned when you look at the pictures. I haven't had any problem with that. The only thing this thing has ever malfunctioned on me for is that rim lock. And we already talked about that and how to get away from it. This thing really, I don't know what to say. I really like it. That's why it's been my pocket gun carry for 10 years. If I was going to go back and buy another one, I might go for the little more power cartridge and go off to the P380 or the P3A2. The P3AT, I have to look it up on their website right now in front of me. I've heard great things about the gun. It is almost the exact same size as the 32. It weighs about 2 ounces more, which is still less than all its competitors by far. Their site says it weighs 8.3 ounces and 2.8 ounces is a load magazine. So at 10.5 ounces, the Ruger LCP has it beat a little bit if you looked at loaded magazine, but unloaded, the 3AT is still smaller, lighter, carries just as many rounds. they're saying that the trigger is the 5-pound crappy trigger that I don't like. And the price is, the blued finish is $318. So it's really a great gun. And, I forgot to add about, I told you I bought this as a belly gun. Well, the way this thing is designed, I don't know if somebody designed it that way or it just ended up being that way. It's really hard to push it out of battery. It has a full-length guide rod on the bottom, and if you push it up against something hard, you can hear me push it up against the desk there, and it still will fire because the full-length guide rod sticks out the bottom a little bit and actually will keep the gun in battery so you can fire it. So I've tried firing it against pillows and stuff. Obviously, I haven't, well, not obviously, but I have not fired it against somebody. But against pillows and in trials, I have not really thrown it out of battery. Not to say that it wouldn't happen. It's just a lot harder to push this one out of battery when you're firing and you want a little pocket gun. I mean, we think about some of these little pocket guns as being belly guns. Police officers use them as a backup. If they're rolling around on the ground with somebody and that guy grabs his gun, it's, you know, they're still locked in Mortal Kombat holding on to each other. The best thing always, and that's why they say revolvers still have some of that mystique and people use the revolver, is because you can push it up against somebody, literally push it into their gut and pull the trigger or around. So check my notes, make sure that's all I had to say. Yep, that would be it. But you can tell how much I like this gun when I bought it for $500 10 years ago. It's still my everyday, one of my everyday carry guns. It's in my man bag or on me all the time. If you're looking for a little tiny pocket gun, something itty bitty to carry, not to shoot a lot, or even if you want to shoot a lot, I'd say look at the Caltex. Everybody that I've known that's bought one hasn't been sorry about it. They're cheaper than a lot of the other stuff. You either love it or you hate it, though. It's going to be one of those guns that you either look at the little Caltex and you go, ooh, that's mine, and you'll carry it forever and ever, if like me. Or you'll look at the thing, pick it up, pull the trigger, and go, ooh, and just never touch another one ever again. So check it out. If you got any questions, shoot me an email at ben@modernselfprotection.com, or you can go over to my site at modernselfprotection.com and see a bunch of other stuff. I'll just... when you hear this one, I just have another podcast that'll be going up Monday, and I'm going to talk about September 11th and some terrorism awareness stuff, and just want you guys to remember that September 11th, 2001, I know it's a long time away, but really, we're getting into that generational gap, which kind of means I'm getting old, that there's kids that are born and don't remember that day yet. Well, I think we need to hang on to that day and remember what it was like, and then remember what it was like right after that, too, when the country kind of united and all the other problems of everything else kind of went away and more was focused on the big things. And I'd like to see the country kind of go back to that, and when it wasn't bad. I mean, I remember in California when before September 11th, putting a flag on my car or in my window or on my gear, I was a weirdo and looked at really funny. But then after September 11th, even with cities like Berkeley trying to outlaw it and stuff, it was still people walking around, bumper stickers on the car everywhere. It was cool to be a patriot. And I'd like to see those times where it was cool to be a patriot and everybody was into it and everybody loved America again. So just, hey, if you got some younger friends, younger kids, remind them what that day was like. Until next time, remember, your mind is the weapon, your gun and knife are only tools, and train it well.
Now it's 10 years later, but it still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine.